Hare Krishna to all the devotees of New Vrindavan. Thank you so much for inviting me to your Sangha. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kalpataru bhayascha kripa sindubeva cha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Ananta koti vaishnavrinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I am very delighted and honored to have the association of all the devotees there. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to have all of your association. So before I start for today's class, I thought if I can recite two verses of Sada Goswami Ashtakam, if that is fine with you, and then I will jump directly to the class. Just two verses, so you can all sing along with me. So we'll take the blessings of the Goswamis before we start glorifying Shripad Jiva Goswami today. Krishna Kirtana Gana Nartana Paro Premamritam Bho Nidhi Dhira Dhira Jana Priya Priya karo nirmasaro pujito Shri Chaitanya kripa bharo bhuvi bhuvo bharavaham tarako Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Jugo Shri Jiva Gopal Go Nana Shastra Vicharane Kanipuno Sadharma Samsthapako Lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanyakaro Radha Krishna padaravinda bhaja nande namata liko Vande Rupa Sanatana Rajugu Go Shri Jiva Gopala Go Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuju Go Shri Jiva Gopala Go So all glories, to Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Dasa Goswami and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and our Guru Parampara Srila Prabhupada ki chai. So, today is the very, very auspicious Disappearance Day. The appearance and the disappearance of the Vaishnavas are both auspicious because while they are here, they teach us with their life and activities, and as they depart, they give us beautiful lessons on how to leave our body and get connected to Lord Shri Krishna. So we all know that the blessings of the Vaishnavas are our only shelter, and their appearance and disappearance days are the days when we can beg for their mercy by glorifying them, by glorifying their life and activities. And that's the only way to go beyond the bodily conception of life, the consciousness of life. And our absorption in their katha is the way to get a swift progress in Krishna consciousness. And we have heard in elsewhere in Srila Prabhupada's conversations also where he said that during the appearance and disappearance days of Jiva Goswami, we should get together and hear about him, glorify his life and activities, and also hear and understand the satsandarbhas, which in such a short time is not possible. But today's our discussion will be largely around his, largely around a trace of his life and activities, because so much is not known about his life and activities as much as we hear about Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Jiva Goswami is very, very special for our parampara because he's a Siddhanta Acharya of our parampara. And Srila Prabhupada had mentioned many times that my mission is to glorify and spread glories of Jiva Goswami around the world, and I request all of you to please cooperate. So Srila Prabhupada said this at several occasions. So today we will try to discuss about Jiva Goswami's life. However, there are not many biographies which we can quote from, but today I'll be largely taking from Narahari Chakravarti's Bhakti Ratnakar and some places of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Navadvip Dham Mahatmyam and Srila Prabhupada lectures, and of course the classes given by senior Vaishnavas. So I'll take you all back 500 years ago in the year 1510. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has just taken sannyas and he's on his way to South India. So he passes through Vishakhapatnam, is one of the places he touches immediately after taking sannyas. And after his 2 years of South Indian yatra, he comes back to Puri. And then he's been insisting devotees that he wants to go to Vrindavan. And that happens to and fro for 2 years. And finally in the year 1514, during the Dasara time, he starts on his journey to Vrindavan. And then he takes a detour. So he goes to Ramkeli, and there he meets Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. Of course, they were Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik at that time, and Sri Vallabh, their brother. So they meet, and that is the place where first time Jiva Goswami, or I would say first and last time, because after that Jiva Goswami never saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is the time when Jiva Goswami had the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, of course, there are various opinions about this. Some places I had read that at that time Jiva Goswami was a little boy, 2 or 3 years old, and he was sitting in his mother's lap and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talking to his uncles and talking to his father. And elsewhere I had heard that it was in the middle of the night that Rupa and Sanatan and Sri Vallabh, they go and meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of this Muslim ruler. So they were all disguised and they had carried little Jiva with them. And that is how Jiva Goswami saw. And then elsewhere I heard that Jiva Goswami followed them, it seems. And while this conversation was happening between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Sanatan and Sri Vallabh, Jiva Goswami was a little away and he was watching this happen. So anyway, it's not about the deeper technicalities, whether he was in the lap or whether he was. But what we understand by this is Jiva Goswami was not more than 3 years old when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if we calculate that way, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, after 2 years in South India, after 2 years in Puri, that means 1514 something, he met Rupa and Sanatan at Ramkeli. And if he was 3 years old, Jiva, that means we can easily conclude that Jiva Goswami appeared in this world somewhere around 1511. If we just draw conclusion by all this events that happened around that time. So then after that, when Dabir Khas, Sakir Malik and Sri Vallabh were given names Rupa, Sanatan and Anupam, they continued with their duties, and to cut the long story short, later they decided to leave. So Rupa Goswami and Sri Vallabh, they take a boat, they take all the money there and they leave to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whereas Sanatan Goswami gets imprisoned. And Rupa and Vallabh, they meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag. And there at the Dasha Ashwamedha Ghat, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives his teaching to Rupa. And afterwards, when both of them are traveling back to Puri, on the way, when they pass Bengal, at the bank of Ganges, Jiva Goswami's father, Sri Vallabh, he leaves his body. And when that news goes to Jiva Goswami, that's like a turning point in his life, because he was so young and now he hears his father is no more. So early in his childhood, most of his association was with his mother. And Jiva Goswami was very fortunate that he had a mother also who was such devotee-minded. most of the time she told amazing stories from the scriptures to Jiva Goswami. So his whole childhood was in Krishna consciousness. So we also hear from Bhakti Ratnakar that when Jiva Goswami was very young, he had this beautiful deities of Krishna Balaram, whom he used to worship. So when the children of his age were busy playing with toys, he used to play with those Krishna Balaram deities, dress them, maybe offer them something, stitch some clothes for them, talk to them. And this is how he spent his childhood. So then once it so happened that as he was immersed in his worship, now he had this habit that whenever he sleeps in the night, he used to cling to them. He used to embrace those deities, Krishna and Balaram, and sleep. So once it so happened, as he was embracing those deities and he went to sleep, what he saw in his dream is he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there raising his both arms and lots of devotees, and they're all doing kirtan. And then he sees Nityananda Prabhu, whom he hasn't seen before. And then what he sees, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they change into the Krishna Balaram deities. And then after some time, he sees that those Krishna Balaram deities whom he's worshipping every day change into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. And they again change back to Krishna Balaram. And that keeps happening. And then he understands, okay, so these Krishna Balaram whom I am worshipping are no different from Shri Shri Gaur Nithai. So he understands. Vrajendra Nandana Jai Sachi Suta Hoilo Sei Balarama Hoilo Nithai Balarama Hoilo Nithai. So he becomes very ecstatic. And now all the more, 24/7, he's immersed in thinking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, and he's in separation. So then finally, when he was around 19 years of age, he decides that I want to leave and I want to join my uncles in Vrindavan. So then he takes permission from his mother and then he leaves. They had a family house in Fatehabad. So he goes from Ramkeli to Fatehabad, finishes up his business, and then he goes to Navadvip. And there, Nityananda Prabhu is also there at that time. So he goes to Srivas Angan, Srivas Thakur's house. And then Nityananda Prabhu is right there and he offers obeisances to Nityananda Prabhu, takes the dust from his lotus feet. And Nityananda Prabhu is so happy in seeing him. And he's very happy because what he had seen in his dream what had happened is he had paid obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his dream had picked him up and he had told him that you take shelter of Nithai. I hand over you to Nithai. And Nityananda Prabhu had, you know, embraced him and had told him that, look, our shelter is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is our Lord. So both of them were, you know, guiding him so nicely. And now when he actually sees Nityananda Prabhu face to face, he's so happy. Oh, the same personality I've seen in my dream. So he becomes very happy and takes blessings of Nityananda Prabhu. And then Nityananda Prabhu, you know, embraces him. And then he tells him, okay, come, I'll take you around. And, you know, and introduce you to all the Vaishnavas here in Navadvip. So he takes Jiva Goswami by his hand. And rest, we read in Navadvip Dham Mahatyam by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, how he takes him around the whole Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. And then he takes Jiva Goswami to Yogapeet, and Sachi Mata is there, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's widow Vishnupriya is there, and Sachi Mata becomes so happy when she sees Jiva Goswami and when she sees Nityananda Prabhu. So then she immediately calls for Ishan, you know, wash Nityananda Prabhu's feet, and immediately Ishan washes the feet and they both come inside. Sachi Mata cooks for Jiva Goswami. Sachi Mata cooks for Jiva Goswami and she gives him prasad and he becomes so happy. And Nityananda Prabhu makes sure that he has the blessings of everybody because he knows that Jiva Goswami is the future of the Gaudiya Sampradaya and he's going to take it further. So he makes sure he gets blessings of all the Vaishnavas present at that time in Navadvip. And I thought that was such a nice lesson for all of us to imbibe, that if anything needs to be done, any great thing needs to be accomplished, we require the blessings of Vaishnava. And Nityananda Prabhu, by this, he was teaching us that how we should take the blessings of Vaishnava before anything we try to accomplish. So then, after the whole Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, customized and personal Navadvip Mandal Parikrama of Jiva Goswami is done, Jiva Goswami very humbly asked Nityananda Prabhu, so can I go to Puri now and have the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So Nityananda Prabhu says, no. Said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given your family Vrindavan. You go to Vrindavan. And even before going to Vrindavan, you should go to Kasi. And there you should study from Madhusudan Vachaspati. Madhusudan Vachaspati was the prominent disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he said, you learn from him and then you join your uncles in Vrindavan. You have a task, you know, you have a seva. And I thought that was also such a beautiful point. More than the darshan of the Lord, the darshan of the instruction of Guru is so important. If it was us, maybe we would have requested Nityananda Prabhu, it's okay, I'll do my seva, but can I just see Lord once? I've seen him when I was very young, so I just want to see once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he doesn't say anything. He says, that's okay, that's it, I'm going. And I think for devotees, all of us around the world, this is one very important lesson. I'm reminded about this very beautiful pastime that happened in 1970s when Srila Prabhupada was giving this beautiful classes on Nectar of Devotion in the Radha Damodar temple in the beginning days when the Vrindavan ISKCON temple construction was going on, and Subhag Maharaj was helping with the construction. So he had to buy cements and talk with the contractors, sign the checks. And Srila Prabhupada was giving classes on NOD, and Subhag Maharaj had a desire in his heart that we are in Vrindavan Dham, and how come Srila Prabhupada is not telling us about nice pastimes of Radha and Krishna? Why all this philosophical class? So one day he couldn't give up his urge of hearing about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Those days where the Vrindavan temple construction was happening, at that place, the devotees were staying there in small huts, and Prabhupada was staying in Radha Damodar temple rooms. So Subhag Maharaj, one day in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock, he goes right there, knocks Prabhupada's door. So Prabhupada, at 2 o'clock, he opens the door and he's like, what brings you here? And Subhag Maharaj says, Prabhupada, I want to hear about Radha and Krishna's pastime. And he was like almost tears because he was desperate. And he said, whole day I'm spending with this construction workers and laborers and purchasing material from Mathura, and I don't know what I'm doing. I just want to hear about Radha and Krishna. And somehow, I don't know, but we can so much relate to it when we are in ISKCON, because, you know, before joining as full-time devotee, you have this imagination that, you know, once I get inside ISKCON as a full-time devotee, maybe a whole day what I'm going to do is just read Bhagavatam and chant my rounds and sit in front of the deities, make garlands. But when you actually come inside, it's not like that. There's so many things one has to do. There's so many different sevas that you have to do. So then Prabhupada tells Subhag Maharaj, what was Arjun doing at the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Was Arjun sitting on his chariot in Padmasan? And was he thinking about Radharani and Krishna? Then Subhag Maharaj says, no, he was fighting. He was fighting with his bow and arrows. And Prabhupada said, so he's not a devotee? Is he not thinking about Krishna? So Prabhupada is trying to drive this point home that it's not that thinking about Krishna is you only sit and think about Krishna. You know, you serve Krishna. You work for Krishna. And this is really inspiring for me. For devotees, the three levels, the way we get connected to Krishna. One is that you think of Krishna. That is, directly you think of Krishna. You hear Krishna Katha, you read Bhagavatam, you look at the deities, you are thinking of Krishna. And one is you think for Krishna. That means you're doing some work, like construction or something, which makes you think for Krishna. So there is something called thinking of Krishna. There's something you think for Krishna, which is not directly related to Krishna, but something which will help you in your service. And then there's something which you think about, which will help you think for Krishna and think of Krishna. So that means sometimes, let's say a businessman, he may not be thinking about Krishna. He's just thinking about his contract, or he's thinking about his money. But that's all right. When he earns his money and when he uses that in service of Krishna, he's thinking about something which will in turn help him to peacefully think of Krishna and think for Krishna. So I thought that was a beautiful point that, you know, on different levels we get connected to Lord. So here, I remember when I was, when my children were young, you know, they used to play those puzzles game and the jigsaw puzzles. And so one thing amazing about those puzzles are when you just independently take them, they really don't mean anything. There'll be half nose and some half eye or half eyebrow or some half, they don't mean anything. But when you actually put them, then they all make a beautiful picture. So I was thinking, all of us somewhere are, you know, with this half nose, half ear. Individually, we don't make any sense. But when we surrender ourselves to the will of Guru, he just knows where to set us up. And then we all together make a beautiful picture. Because what we can't see, you know, they can see. And they just know where to put us. And then a beautiful picture in service of Krishna comes up. So Jiva Goswami completely surrenders and he says, all right, so I'm on my way. So then Jiva Goswami goes to Prayag and there he learns the six systems of philosophy. He also reads those theses which are against the Vaishnava philosophies. So sometimes devotees ask this question that, you know, Asat Sangatyag, Vaishnava Rachar, as Vaishnavas, we don't associate with Mayavadis or we don't associate with Mayavadi philosophies. But in case of Jiva Goswami, it's different because he's just doing it because if you want to explain somebody about something, you first need to start from where he understands. So he had to use in his books those terms and defeat them by their own verses or own arguments that they were quoting. So as devotees, of course, we don't need doctorates or PhDs, but the whole point of getting them is if you want to preach to a particular class of people, you first need to enter their class, then you can preach. So if you are not even in their bracket, in their class, they won't accept your preaching. So then he gets all this knowledge, and you know, I mean, he's a Nitya Siddha. So he gets he equips himself with all this philosophy, and within a year's time, he becomes so famous all over Kasi. Everybody's like, if they want to print a book, they just go to him. Can you check my book? And is there anything wrong? Any grammatical mistakes or something or whatever? So, and he just makes the correction and he becomes so famous. And then after 1 year of education there, he joins Rupa and Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan. And then again, the whole thing begins. Same like what Nityananda Prabhu did, taking Jiva by hand and making sure all the Vaishnavas bless him in Navadvip. Same thing Rupa and Sanatan, they do that. They take Jiva by hand and they make sure that everybody, you know, blesses him. And those days, Vrindavan was a hub of Goswamis. Like Bhugarbha Goswami was there and Gopal Bhatta Goswami was there and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was there and Raghunath Dasa Goswami was there and Lokanath and Goswami and Rupa and so everybody were there. So, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, they take Jiva and they make sure that everybody blesses him. And within a short span of time, Jiva Goswami becomes everybody's favorite. One thing is because of his humility, because of his very, very sweet nature. Everybody used to instantly like him. One thing is, of course, because of his connection with Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. He was nephew, so they had that attachment towards him. The other Goswamis felt very happy to connect to Jiva because he's connected to such elevated Goswamis. And one thing is, he was so enthusiastic in his bhajan, very enthusiastic. And then he was very learned. And he was very young, so very spirited, and he could help everybody around him. And he was very expert in serving the Vaishnavas. So all these qualities made him instantly everybody's favorite in Vraja. So everybody's just Jiva, Jiva, Jiva. You know, he's like center of, everybody's talking about, you know, everybody's taking help from him. So then Jiva Goswami approaches Sanatan Goswami for Diksha. Sanatan Goswami says, no, you should take it from Rupa. So he asks Rupa Goswami to initiate him. And then Rupa Goswami says, well, I have to train him. So now we'll wonder, we have this ISKCON disciple course and this course. And so what course Rupa Goswami had, because Jiva Goswami was already a big scholar. So then he says, no, I'll train him for some time and then I'll give him Diksha. So then Rupa Goswami, what kind of training he gives him? He asks him to do menial services. So now we can imagine he's a scholar and here is Jiva Goswami's cutting, cooking, cleaning. And then he's doing all the menial sevas, cleaning the ashram, going for madhukari. And then he did the very laborious work of making those palm leaves in which Rupa Goswami will write the write his literature, write his books. So he used to make, you have to dry them and you have to make the ink for writing. So he did all that menial job. And Rupa Goswami was very happy with his service. And for years together he did that. Because when he came to Vrindavan, maybe he was 20, and he lived in Vrindavan for 65 years. And when he left body, he was maybe 85 years old or something. So for a long time, he did service to Rupa Goswami. So while doing all this menial seva, he also did proofreading. So whatever books the Goswamis were writing, they were asking him to help with the proofreading and, the corrections if there are any spelling mistakes. So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was being written by Rupa Goswami at that time. So he asked Jiva Goswami to do the proofreading of the manuscripts. And later on, of course, Jiva Goswami did write a commentary, Durgama Sangamini, on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Sanatan Goswami's commentary on the 10th canto, Vaishnava Toshini. That was also again edited by Jiva Goswami. And then later he wrote a Laghu Toshini commentary on Sanatan Goswami's 10th canto commentary. So like that, he wrote many commentaries. So while all this is happening, a very, very beautiful pastime took place, and which is one of my very favorite pastimes connected to Jiva Goswami. OBL Kapoor, Shripad Adhikesha Prabhu, in his book, he mentions this pastime narrated, disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He mentions this pastime very nicely. So it so happened one day that Rupa Goswami is there and Jiva Goswami is fanning Rupa Goswami. And then Vallabhacharya, Pushti Marag Sampradaya, the prominent Acharya, he walks in. And Rupa Goswami is very respectful to Vallabhacharya because even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so friendly and respectful. And those days, the Vallabha Sampradaya, the Pushti Marag Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Sampradaya were like brothers, very closely attached to each other. So when he comes in, Rupa Goswami is very respectful to him. And then he just shows him, by the way, that I'm composing this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And do you think you can hear my work? And if there is any changes or any editing, you can advise me. So he said, very well, go ahead. So Rupa Goswami just reads the whole thing. And at one place where Rupa Goswami is talking about mukti, mukti is a witch. A desire for bhakti or mukti is like a witch. So at that place, Vallabhacharya stops him and says, don't you think you're being a little harsh here? Do you have to use this word? Because mukti is, after all, very glorious. Everybody are craving for mukti. So don't you think a little bit harsh here, as, saying that mukti is like a witch, is it not? Maybe you can use this guy, instead of saying witch, maybe you can use like this. So immediately Rupa Goswami, he takes the correction. He said, yeah, sure, definitely, I'll make the changes. Now Jiva Goswami, who was fanning Rupa Goswami at that time, he doesn't like it. How come he corrected my guru? So he doesn't say anything. But later when Vallabhacharya goes for taking bath in the Yamuna, when he comes back after taking bath, so little Jiva is standing there. And very, very humbly he says, if I may, that correction which you gave to my guru, you said that mukti is preha, pishachi is not right. But I just want to let you know that my guru didn't say that mukti is pishachi, which what he said is priha, mukti is priha, pishachi. The desire for mukti is like a witch. Mukti by itself is not a witch. So he says, for that matter, any desire is like a witch. The person who is under the influence of any desire starts acting very crazily. When somebody is driven by a particular desire, whatever desire that may be, that influences you to do so many activities which is not supposed to be done. So that is what he meant to say. So immediately Vallabhacharya, I mean, such a great Vaishnava, he very nicely accepts the correction. He said, yeah, you are right. I didn't see that. I didn't observe that. You are right. It says spriha. Mukti spriha is like a witch. So he goes back immediately to Rupa Goswami. He says, you can leave it. Don't need to correct. It's nice. You can leave it as it is. And by the way, you know, your disciple is amazing. Oh, you know, so Rupa Goswami is surprised. He said, no, I'm talking about Jiva, you know, amazing. He told me this. You know, he just told me, and otherwise I would have made a mistake by asking you to correct. And then Vallabhacharya leaves. And the moment Vallabhacharya leaves, Rupa Goswami gets very upset. He gets very upset with Jiva Goswami, and he says, what audacity. Why did you correct Vallabhacharya? You know what, how respectable he is. Is this Vaishnava etiquette? So looks like you're getting a lot of pride, you know. And those who have pride, Vrindavan is not the place. So you better get out from Vrindavan. You know, this is not the place for you. So this is not the first time. Actually, even before this incident, there was another incident happened with Rupa Narayan. Rupa Narayan was a Digvijay Pandit. And he was going all around and defeating people in arguments. So when he came to argue with Rupa Goswami was busy writing his scriptures. So he said, I'm not capable of arguing with you. So he says, I don't fake humility. If you think you're not capable, put it in words. Here is my Vijayapatra. Sign. I'm not capable of arguing. Sign it. So Rupa Goswami said, wonderful. I'll do it. Please give me any signs. So he just shows it around to everybody in Vrindavan, you know. So they say, oh, that's all right. But Sanatan Goswami is more, you know, he's elder brother of Rupa and guru of Rupa. So you have not defeated him. So he immediately runs to Sanatan Goswami. Same thing Sanatan Goswami says, look, I'm not so capable to, you know, fight with you. So he says, no, don't fake humility. Sign. So he signs. So then he shows everybody in Vrindavan and they're like, oh, that's all right, but you have not defeated Jiva Goswami. He came from Kasi. He knows so much scripture. So he goes to Jiva Goswami and says, you know, I want to argue with you. And Jiva Goswami says the same thing. Oh, no, I'm not so capable. I'll sign wherever you want me to sign. Bring the paper. So the moment he brings the Vijayapatra, then he sees, oh my God, you know, my guru's name is there, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. And that's where he gets upset. He says, this is like defaming my guru. You know, he's going to show around to people, you know, how dare. So he says, I'm not going to sign. Come, you argue with me. So then for 7 days and 7 nights, they've been arguing. And finally, Jiva Goswami defeats him. And then he becomes so happy. He just wants to come and inform his guru, you know, that that fellow was defaming you. And look, I defeated him. And Rupa Goswami becomes so upset. He said, you wasted 7 days in arguing with that Digvijay Pandit. How could you waste 7 days? And then, you know, and so he said, no, but he had your name. So I just wanted to, and then, you know, it was something like, you know, sometimes arguments, sometimes when we make an argument with somebody, we think we're doing good, but we're wasting time sometimes. Sometimes you can't change people, even when we are preaching and we go out for book distribution. Some people are sattvic and it's worth it to convince them and invest some time. But sometimes some people are completely atheistic. No matter how much we invest our time, we can't do much about it. It's like, you know, if you convince somebody against their will, their opinion still, you know, stays still. You can't. They won't change their opinion. So that's what Rupa Goswami is trying to tell him, that why, you know, all that argument. You know, it's like if there is a cockroach in your house, you don't throw an atom bomb in the house, because you know cockroach was there, so I had to throw the atom bomb. You know, just to remove cockroach, you don't burn the whole house. So just to, you know, prove your point to somebody or something, why waste time is what Rupa Goswami was trying to tell him. That why did you waste your 7 days time? You know, you could have do things, better things. So, and now when this, at that time also he was banished to get out from Vrindavan, and then somehow he was brought back, and again he did this again. So this time, you know, again he's like, you know, what is this? You know, these arguments basically, they bring out a sense of pride in us, you know, when we defeat somebody in argument, we prove our point right, then that makes us also very dry as devotees, you know. We lose that compassion for the other person's opinion because we are so much in hurry to prove our point, right? So here now, Rupa Goswami is trying to, you know, because if you see Rupa Goswami's book also, Nectar of Instruction, the first thing he says is, Vacho Vegam, right? Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jivva Vegam, Udara Pasta Vegam, Etan Vegan Yo Vishayate Dhira Sarvam Apimam Prithavim Cha Shishyat. From beginning he's like, Vacho Vegam, why couldn't you control your urge to speak? Even whatever he's saying, why do you have to speak? Whatever correction Vallabhacharya is making, why couldn't you control yourself? And I think for us devotees also, it's such an important lesson. We may not be as scholarly as Jiva Goswami, but even we get that, you know, if somebody is saying something and we immediately want to correct. Oh, that was not like that. Actually, that story was like that. Oh, no, actually, I heard from Maharaj, he said like this. That's a tendency, but that was not the tendency of Jiva Goswami. He's a Nitya Siddha. Basically, the whole pastime is for us to take lessons, just like Prabhupada very famously says that if a mother-in-law wants to correct the daughter-in-law, she won't say anything directly to daughter-in-law. She'll correct the daughter and the daughter-in-law will learn. So by this pastime, Rupa Goswami wants to teach us an important lesson about Vaishnava etiquette. But Jiva Goswami he did it in a very humble position, in a very, very humble way. He just asked Vallabhacharya that, by the way, this is what my guru meant. But however, he said, no, you know, how could you could not control your, you know, vega of speech? Why couldn't you control your speech? I was reading other day a very interesting book, and there was one point mentioned there by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he said, if somebody can't control their vega of speech, of talking, then whatever sukruti they have accumulated in their life starts leaking. Just like if somebody has trying to put water inside a pot which is having a hole, or somebody is trying to put water inside a half-baked pot, what happens? The water starts leaking. Similarly, a devotee who doesn't have control over his speech and starts speaking just about anything, then all his accumulated sukriti of lifetimes starts getting drained. And I thought that was so beautiful. One has to be so careful what we are speaking, when, how, to whom, what words we are using. I want to share something. I don't know how authentic it is, but it helped me, so I just want to share. A couple of years ago, I was traveling, and in the flight, you know, the in magazines, there was one Hindi magazine, and I saw one Swamiji's picture. So I thought, let me just see what's there, and I read this very beautiful article in Hindi, which I want to share with you, where the Swamiji mentions that he took it from some Narayan Shastra, and I don't know what is Narayan Shastra, and that's why I said I don't know how authentic it is, but it's helpful for us. So he said that according to Narayan Shastra, we do two kinds of karma, good karma and bad karma. And we are almost all the time carrying the basket on our head of good karma and bad karma. And he said, whatever bad karma we do, we get the results of those bad karma by four ways. Either some financial difficulty in our life, some physical difficulty like health problem, or some mental problem, or some relationship issues. So he said four ways we suffer: mental, physical, economical, or social relationships. And he said, now, whenever you are criticizing somebody, you're saying something bad about somebody, what happens is, whatever bad karma that person has done, a part of it gets transferred to you. Now, somebody may say, but I'm not criticizing anybody. Oh, that's all right. But if you are hearing that criticism, then also the same procedure applies. Whoever you are hearing about the criticism, that person's bad karma gets transferred to you. And over and above, if you are criticizing completely out of context, you know, completely not applicable to that person, then even a part of your good karma gets transferred to them. So that means every single day that we are gossiping and criticizing, you know, forget about normal people. You know, in devotee circle, we end up doing it with devotees. Every time we are losing our good karma to them, and their bad karma is getting transferred to us. And then he made a very funny point. He said, if somebody is criticizing somebody, okay, anyway, he's getting bad karma. But the other person who is hearing gets dual bad karma. And how is that? He said, that other person is hearing criticism, so he'll get bad karma. And while hearing the criticism, he must be thinking in his mind, are this devotee is criticizing that devotee, but he's also not so good. He's also like that only. He also has all these bad qualities. So now dual criticism he's doing of that person and the person who's right now standing in front of him. So he gets their bad karma transferred. And then in the ending of his article, he said that whenever we do bad karma, the results we have to, you know, accept the results either or. Financial, social, relationships issue, mental, physical. But when other people's bad karma get transferred to us, it's not either or. It is all inclusive. All four ways you suffer, and that also with interest. And I thought, my God, that was quite interesting. So I don't know the authorized source of this Narayan Shastra, what the Swamiji was talking about. But when I shared this with our devotees here in Vizag, they were very happy. They said, Mataji, this is something, you know, anytime we hear anybody criticizing or we initiate anything, at least we'll be worried. Oh, I don't want to take anybody's bad karma. You know, we work so hard to accumulate some good karma and I don't want to share my good karma with anybody. So, I think somewhere it must be true, because we see Vishwanath Chakra Thakur also saying that, yeah, you lose your Sukruti when you are criticizing. So, yeah, some kind of a connection is there. You definitely lose some good karma when you are criticizing, and you definitely end up getting somebody else's bad karma. And it seems so logical. Sometimes you see somebody is doing all bad, you know, but you see there's not, you know, like people ask this question, why bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. So I was just wondering that good things happen to bad people because everybody is going on criticizing that bad person. So I guess all his bad karmas are getting distributed among people. I mean, you know, this is one way of thinking, you know, just to caution ourselves that speak less and whatever we speak is productive, and we just don't unnecessary talk. And of course, that's why Prabhupada has given us this, you know, talk. If you want to talk about Krishna and hear about Krishna. Okay, so coming back to our story here. So then Jiva Goswami is banished. So he's somewhere outskirts, you know, in Mathura. Somebody said Nanda Ghat, somebody said somewhere, anyway, there are many opinions about it. And it so happened that the villagers saw him, you know, he was staying in some crocodile hole and he was just taking once in a 3 days food, just mixing some dry flour with Yamuna water, and that's all. And I heard one very interesting thing. And during that time is one that he composed Satsandarbha. Now, this is what I heard. Now, I don't know where, but that is the time he composed the Satsandarbha. And when I heard that, I thought, I mean, even to read a normal Bhagavatam, we look for a conducive atmosphere, pleasant mind, fan is going on, seat is comfortable, everything is okay. Even to read the scriptures, we want a conducive atmosphere. And here is somebody inside the crocodile hole. Guru has banished him, and such a suffering he must be going on in his mind. And he's writing Satsandarbha. I mean, every opportunity he's utilizing to serve Krishna. And I thought, wow, that was amazing. So then the villagers, they're very friendly to Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami is like a father to all the villagers. He chats with them and talks to them. And, you know, for him, Vrajavasis, because Vrajavasis are into so much consciousness of Krishna that even normal talking with Vrajavasis is like Krishna Katha. So he's just talking to them. So some of the villagers, they go and complain to him that there's one young Baba, you know, he's not eating anything and very austere and is becoming skinny and he's inside the crocodile hole. So when Sanatan Goswami sees that, he immediately goes to Rupa Goswami. He understands it must be Jiva. So then he goes, and very famous, we know this, and where he tells Rupa Goswami that looks like you are forgetting the important instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says, what is that? So he says, what are the three instructions? So then he says, yeah, he says, Name Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva, Jiva Daya. And then Sanatan Goswami is like, go again. What did you say the last one? He says, Jiva Daya. So he says, yeah. So where is Jiva Daya? So then he immediately understands, oh, yeah. So what about Daya for our Jiva? So then Rupa Goswami immediately calls Jiva Goswami back. And then he personally nourishes him. I mean, you know, makes sure that he takes proper prasadam and he gets back to shape. So then Jiva Goswami is back to his service with Rupa Goswami. So I think this one incident in Jiva Goswami's life gives so many instructions. You know, an ideal guru, an ideal disciple. How, like an ideal disciple, he wanted to protect the honor of his guru. He just didn't stand and watch the tamasha. Somebody is insulting his guru and you just watch. You know, he didn't do that. He immediately went there and he defeated the Digvijay Pandit. He immediately corrected Vallabhacharya. And an ideal guru also. I mean, such a nice example, you know, he gave that a guru has all the authority to correct his disciple. And also how the guru corrects, how a disciple accepts. And such a nice lesson by Vallabhacharya also. Those days he was like one of the very, very prominent acharyas, but so humbly he accepts the correction. And then we see how Sanatan Goswami also plays the right role as an elderly Vaishnava, trying to reconcile, I mean, bring everybody back, you know. So this is such a beautiful lesson. Everybody playing their role so perfectly. So then, well, finally, Rupa Goswami, to appease Jiva Goswami, gives him a very beautiful gift. Of course, there's a big story about that, which we don't want to go. How Radha Govindji come in his dream, and Radha Govindji change into the form of Radha Damodar. And then he says that I want to be served by Jiva. So then Rupa Goswami himself personally carves the deities, and in the month of Kartik, he gives those deities to Jiva Goswami. And then Jiva Goswami worships Radha Damodar. And then we know that Narahari Chakravarti mentioned so many pastimes, that how Jiva Goswami used to do so nicely worship, that Radha Damodar sometimes used to talk to Jiva Goswami. Sometimes when he's just giving incense, Radha Damodar used to say, Jiva, I want to eat something. Go and get something for me. So then he used to go and cook. He was an expert cook, an expert pujari. And then sometimes Damodar used to just play flute and call Jiva, come and sit in here, you know, I'm playing this flute. So he had such amazing relation with the deities. So not only was he a scholar par excellence, he was a pure devotee, he was a teacher, he was a manager, he was a leader, he was a visionary. And this is something rare, to have the combination of all, you know. Like sometimes we see somebody may be a good speaker, but may not be a good manager. Or somebody may be a scholar, but he can't be a good teacher. Because he may be a scholar by himself, but he can't put across his thoughts to people. He can't make it simple for people to understand. Somebody may be very expert teacher, just can make, you know, the toughest subject very simple and explain it to people, but they may not be scholars. So that's why, you know, sometimes you hear this, professors are absent-minded, because they may be professors, but they can't do little things properly. But if you see Jiva Goswami, he was all in one. He wrote 25 books, wrote more than 4 lakh verses. Now this is something, I mean, Vedavyas himself, who is a literary incarnation of Lord, whatever, Mahabharata, Raman, all together also, maybe they're not so many verses. He wrote more than 4 lakh verses all alone, and 25 books. And that also different varieties. It's not one kind of book. He wrote literature, which is like, you know, poetry and prose. Like we see Gopal Champu, it's a combination of poetry and prose. So he wrote literature books. He wrote philosophical books. You see Tattva Sandarbha. I was hearing Radhika Raman Prabhu, our Dr. Ravi Gupta, famous, and he told one very interesting thing. He said that, you know, these 6 Tattva Sandarbhas, he said this Paramatma and Bhagavat and Preeti and Krishna Sandarbha. So out of the 6 Sandarbhas, he said he took 1 Sandarbha for his PhD. And out of that 1 Sandarbha, there are 6 parts. And after that, he took the 3rd part. And in the 3rd part, there are 105 sections. And out of that, he took 105th section. And only that, he studied for years together to get a PhD. So now imagine, this is not even, you know, point of what Jiva Goswami has written. So what scholar he is. So scholar par excellence. He wrote literature. He wrote philosophical books. He wrote commentaries. I told about the commentaries he wrote on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and on. And then he wrote manuals. He wrote Harinam, grammar, Vyakaran, you know. So that also, he made it very Krishna conscious. everything that he taught also, he made it Krishna conscious. Like we teach our children consonants and vowels, A, E, I, O, U. So there also he says vowels are like Sarveshwar, they are God, and consonants are like Vishnujan. Because without vowels, you can't pronounce consonants. So they are Sarveshwar and they are Vishnujan. Because when we say ba, then we say ba, but a voice comes. So see how consonants are dependent on vowels. So everything used to make it very Krishna conscious. So by the time somebody does the Harinam Vyakaran, they'll become devotee. So manuals or literatures or philosophy or commentaries. So he was a scholar, he was a teacher, he was teaching disciples of other gurus. Narottam Das Thakur, he took initiation from Lokanath Goswami, but he was learning under Jiva Goswami. And Shyamananda Pandit, he took initiation from Hriday Chaitanya, but he was learning from Jiva Goswami. And when Srinivas Acharya, he also took initiation from Gopal Bhatta Goswami, but he was learning under Jiva Goswami. So he was a good teacher and he was a good visionary also. So I was reading somewhere that he made a will of what will happen to the temples, what will happen to the books, what will go where. He had such vision. And even he made sure the Radha Govinda temple got registered, you know, so that later on nobody destroys that temple. Because you see the Keshav Ji Math in Mathura, the Keshav temple, it got destroyed. But you see Govindji temple, even though Aurangzeb destroyed the three floors, but the rest of it's still there, and it's only because of Jiva Goswami. Because he made sure that there was a farman issued by the Muslim kings. So he made friendship with all those Hindu kings who were working like a minister in the court in Delhi of Akbar, and he had good political relations with them, and he made sure that these temples were properly legally legally on the names and registered and farman, you know, that this belongs to them. And he was a good manager. When Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to make this whole Radha Kund renovation, Jiva Goswami was helping him with the day-to-day. In fact, the little place near Radha Kund, he got it registered on the name of Raghunath Das Goswami for his bhajan. So all that legal things also he used to take care. So not only a manager, a leader, a visionary, and a writer, a scholar. Akbar was so impressed with Jiva Goswami that at one time Akbar asked him, "What can I do for you?" So he said, "Give me some paper, blank paper." Because those days it was difficult to get paper to write books. So he asked, and those kings, they had paper. So he got some paper for writing scriptures. So that was Jiva Goswami. And of course, that qualities we see in our Srila Prabhupada. He was also a leader, a visionary, a manager, writing books in the night and managing this whole worldwide International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he made sure that after he leaves also, everything will be continued in a proper way. And that's what Jiva Goswami also did. He made a will, and even while he was there, he started the preaching work. When Jahanava Mata, Nityananda Prabhu's wife, came to Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami personally took her on a tour of Rajamandal Parikrama. And later on, she wrote to Jiva Goswami that after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has left, so much new philosophies are coming up, and people are getting deviated from the main philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So please send the Vaishnav literature so that we will republish them, get it rewritten and spread them. So then he sent his three prominent disciples, Srinivas Acharya and Shyamananda, and we know all that story of how he organized the whole thing, put them in bullock cart, put them in a trunk and lock it, and 10 armed men, and they all went to Bengal. And of course we know the story of how at one Vishnupur, the king Barhamveer, who was king in the daytime and dacoit in the night, actually gets it stolen. And then when they send this message to Jiva Goswami, all the Vaishnava Acharyas there are like heartbroken that, we have years together, we have spent writing these books, and now they're all lost. So what will happen? But Jiva Goswami is so patient. I think that is one very beautiful quality of a leader. When he's there in the front, he needs to manage. And he says, "That's all right. Whatever happens, there'll be some plan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." Like we always hear that things may be out of our control, but things are never out of Krishna's control. They may be out of our control. So then Of course, then Shyamananda, he makes Srinivas Acharya, he makes Brahmavir a disciple. And later on, the same king who had stolen the books, now he becomes so guilty. Not only he returns the books, he says, now I'll help you to reprint these books. You know, my whole kingdom, all my citizens, everybody will serve you now. So now, what these three people couldn't have done, now he got the support of the whole kingdom. And I thought that was also so inspiring, that sometimes the bad news are just going to open door to some better news. We never know. We just need to wait patiently. So this is what happened, you know. So initially, if this were not stolen, these three people had to do it by themselves, but now the whole kingdom was there to help them. So like that, there are so many other pastimes which happened, and how Jiva Goswami met Mirabai. I don't know how authentic that is, but yeah, there's one pastime of Jiva Goswami meeting Mirabai, how he said no, and then Mirabai says, well, I thought Krishna is the only Purusha. I never knew that there's one more Purusha in Vrindavan. And which Jiva Goswami hears that, he immediately comes out and he meets Mirabai. So like that, there are so many pastimes, and I don't know, I think I went over time. So on this auspicious Tirobhav Tithi of Jiva Goswami, we can heartfully pray to him to shower his mercy on all of us. And the only way that we can serve these acharyas is by reading scriptures and trying to spread it in our own little way, whatever we can do. So Srila Prabhupada also toiled so hard. I feel it's no coincidence that Srila Prabhupada was there in the beginning days in Radha Damodar temple, because we see that, you know, Prabhupada is like having those same qualities like Jiva Goswami. So all these years that he was in Radha Damodar, maybe he took all that qualities and all that energy, all that blessings of Jiva Goswami before, you know, starting out on his mission in the West. So with those days, the whole planning happened in Radha Damodar temple. All the Goswamis used to meet there regularly, where they used to plan about their future mission, excavating deities, building temples, printing books, spreading Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada took his inspiration from there and spread the message of Krishna all around the world. So we just pray in the lotus feet of Jiva Goswami and all the acharyas to bless us, that we not only read the books, but we live them and spread them. So with this, I'll end it here. Thank you so much. Shripad Jiva Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna.